film reviews and movie news with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Yes, it is. It's film reviews and movie news with me, Stuart Pink, and the hottest thing out of Brentwood since the Thermos factory. It's Mark Searby.
Or the coldest thing. It depends which, you know, what you're putting in your Thermos flask, I guess.
You could be the hottest thing. I'll be the coolest
thing. Okay, yeah. I like that. I like that. Yeah.
Deal. So it.
Yes. Oh, no. I like
Amazing. That. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thanks. I'm very good. However, I will say this. I am a little bit penniless at the moment.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that I think this week is possibly the biggest week for DVD and Blu-ray releases here in the UK in probably 4 or 5 years. Because
I thought you were just talking like end of January blues.
Well, isn't that as well, obviously.
You got paid and it's all gone
again. It's all gone again, yeah, absolutely. No, but this week, check this out. This week alone in the UK on DVD and Blu-ray, Dune, Last Night in Soho, Ghostbusters Afterlife, Censor. Now, we've reviewed those.
All out on the same week.
All out on the same week. That's the thing. All out on the same week. We've reviewed all of those. We gave all of them glowing reviews. I mean, Dune was my favourite film of the year. You know, and it's like, I've got to choose between these as to what to buy.
Or remortgage the house. Or,
yes, exactly. That's the thing. Because, you see, I don't just buy the normal Blu-ray. I like the limited edition ones, you see, which obviously...
Oh, you're a sucker for I am.
Yeah.
Stick a poster and a...
That's the thing. Stick a limited sign on anything. And I'm like, limited? Really? I better buy that. Okay. So big week. Really big week. And, it would be remiss of us not to mention that these films are out on DVD and Blu-ray. And they are absolutely stellar. All of them are fantastic. You know, Dune, obviously reinvigorated everybody's interest in what was probably an unfilmable book, to be honest with you. And I think everybody's looking forward to part two. Last Night in Soho, Edgar Wright's trip into the horror genre is absolutely fantastic. Really well put together. And I'd said this last year, when Anya Taylor-Joy finally wins an Oscar, it will all be worth it because her performances over the past year have been absolutely brilliant, and she's fantastic
she's
in
great.
That. Along with Mackenzie Davis as well, she's brilliant. Ghostbusters Afterlife, you know, wonderful. It moves the story forward, but it also harks back to the original. I watched it again the other week, and I'm like, I love this. It's so good. Got teary-eyed at the end, of course.
Oh,
I know. And Censor, which... one of the best British horror films of the past few years. And anybody who grew up during the Video Nasty era, like I did, will absolutely adore this movie. Feature film debut from Pano Bailey Bond. And I just thought this is brilliant. You know, so huge week. Huge
Could
week already.
Record-breaking sales in DVDs for the first time in years.
Yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me. That's the thing. And there is still an appetite there for physical product. That's the great thing about it. You know, that they are coming back around. Streaming will always have its place, but physical product is selling well again. And it's great. And it doesn't surprise me when you have weeks like this. It's all about how much money have you got in your pocket? Can you buy them all? And unfortunately, sometimes we can't. We just have to wait for the sale to come around. So big week already. And then we've got to talk about the films that are out this week as well.
Yeah, we've got new stuff. So not only have you got to spend all this money on DVDs, you've also got to spend all this money on shelves to put them on.
Yes.
And then you've got to spend money to go to the cinema to catch the latest stuff.
Exactly. This is the thing. This is the thing. Or also, don't forget, on streaming or on digital download as well. I mean, you know, we're all across the board here. But you're right. Yeah. Let's spend
what
some
awesome
money.
Stuff. You got for us this week, Mark?
Well, let's spend some money at the cinema first, I think. You know, let's start with a film called The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
Oh, The Eyes of Tammy
Faye. Now, it's not a horror film. It's not a horror film, okay? I know it might be.
They've not removed her eyes.
No. It's about Tammy Faye Baker and her husband, Jim, who revolutionise the tele-evangelism as they host their own Christian show every day, reaching to over 20 million people. But soon their relationship starts to break apart due to Tammy.
Oh.
Now, do you know anything about this? Because this is real life. This actually happened.
No, I've seen the trailer. I guess it was sort of based on a true story that I don't know anything about.
Yeah. I mean, the same here because their show didn't stretch over here, I don't believe. Yeah, so it's all based on true story, which, and the film is also based on a documentary. Now, the documentary you can watch on Amazon Prime. That is on there. It's by this. It's exactly the same title, so don't get confused. Okay. it is, so this movie, and I'm not going to talk about the movie, is a real howitzer of a true crime movie. But it doesn't start out like that either. That's the thing. So what we see is two people very devoted to their religion, Christianity, and also very devoted to each other. Pretty soon, Jim starts to see that their love of the Lord can be put onto TV and they can ask for donations for their cause. And it is very clear that Tammy and Jim are entertainers. Like, they love doing what they do. They love talking to people. You know, they're the type of people that if they hadn't have done this, you would have seen them front and center at somewhere like Disneyland. Okay. They just love to be doing stuff like that.
Stage.
Yeah. But a dark underbelly starts to grow, and this film develops into, well, it starts to show how Jim becomes more obsessed with the TV show and also another person who works alongside him. This then alienates Tammy, and she starts to grow apart, and she starts to take on Jim at his own game. She becomes the power person in the relationship. You know, she's the one who the fans love more, basically.
Yeah.
But under all of that, so you've got all of this going on, but under that, there is this attitude here of do as I say, not as I do. Especially with Jim. I mean, Tammy to a certain degree as well. I mean, we see her buying glamorous clothes and paying for houses, and she's got loads of credit cards, etc. But it is Jim. It's also, you see Tammy start to feel guilty, and she, you know, she's starting to worry about the seven deadly sins as well. I mean, it's a fascinating film about how religion can be seen as, in some eyes, as a cult, and also those on high can be seen as charlatans and going against everything that they preach to their congregations. So what it's doing is it is showing you, look how great these people can be. Look at what they're doing. They're building this from scratch, and you're going, this is great. You know, anybody who can build something like that, especially at this time as well, you know, this was a few decades ago. And then all of a sudden you start to see the jealousy and the hatred start to come up, you know, which you see. So the film itself really relies on the two central performances. And as much as I like Andrew Garfield as Jim Baker, I think the film belongs to Jessica Chastain as Tammy Faye. I mean, she's almost unrecognizable. You've seen the trailer.
I have. I didn't realize it was her. Yeah, I genuinely didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the brilliance of this. You know how you have people going, unrecognizable, and you go, no, that's just the same person. We can tell who it is.
Yeah.
But she is genuinely unrecognizable here. And it wouldn't surprise me if hair and makeup win quite a lot of awards for this movie, to be honest with you. I mean, the hair.
Biggest transformation since Churchill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, the hair alone in this is, you know, it's 80s backcombed and bouffanted and whatever else. It's really good. Anyway. So Jessica Chastain in this film, she really makes us care for Tammy, you know, especially when she's not been loved by her mother, and she sets out to prove herself to her mother and via, you know, her love of the Lord. And you know, Jessica Chastain brings out all of these emotions that ultimately you would watch somebody and you would go, I don't like this person at all. But somehow Jessica Chastain makes Tammy Faye lovable, I think, is the word to describe. You know, there are things that you don't like about her. That's the point of it. But at the same time, you think she's just losing herself. You know, she just needs to find her center again, and she would be off. It's one of those performances of like hate turned to love. I think that's the thing. You know, you're watching it and you're going, I really hate this person. I absolutely hate it. And then all of a sudden you go, I can see what she's trying to do. I can see, you know, and then all of a sudden you start to fall in love with this. So I think absolutely top draw performance from Jessica Chastain, you know, and I think she will be nominated for a few awards up and down.
Amazing.
You know, I think the film itself is really good, actually. I think it's an excellent film. You will get riled up by people conning ordinary folk out of their money. Yet there is something really interesting in this movie that makes you eventually care for one of the main perpetrators. And that's a hard thing to do, especially in this type of circumstance. You know, if you are not a religious person at all, if you're an atheist or, you know, or a theist or something, you'll have a very different viewpoint on this than anybody who is religious. You know, that I think that's the driving point behind this. But the same, I think the same emotion will come through, which is you will still hate Tammy at the start and then love her by the end because of the roller coaster she's been through and everything else. And it's weird as well, because as I said at the start, it's a true crime film. And yet it doesn't feel like it.
That's the trailer, you look at it, you're like, that's true crime. Crime.
Exactly.
Crime game.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a tongue-in-cheek, slightly camp, you know, you could watch this next to House of Gucci or something like that. And it's not. That's the strange thing about it. It's a true crime drama. Like, there's some funny bits in the trailer and there's some funny bits in the movie as well. Few and far between. This is a drama, and it's a very good drama as well.
Brilliant. So this is... out on cinema, DVD?
It's in cinemas. It is in cinemas, yes.
In cinemas now. The eyes of Tammy Faye. It's had the eyes of Mark Searby. Was it divinely inspired?
Well, it's funny you say that, actually, divinely inspired, because we're talking about one film that's about religion, and now we're going to talk about another film that's got religion in it.
Good God. So we are.
We are. I, do you know what? I didn't even notice this at all until I just moved the bit of paper. And the synopsis...
Take us to church, Mark.
Yes. Well, obviously, you know, Eyes of Tammy Faye is a church thing, but it's done through the medium of television. This one, Confession, is actually in a church. So here's the synopsis. One church, one priest, one wounded man and his loaded gun. Father Pete is held hostage by vengeful criminal Victor Strong. So, it does have religion at it as well. Yes, yes.
It does.
I think the first thing to say about this film is that it has four people listed on the credits, just four people, okay? However, it very much is a two-hander. And I think that's the times when the film is at its strongest, when it's letting Cole Meaney, who plays Father Pete, and Stephen Moyer, who plays Victor Strong, just go at each other. Just dialogue, not action. Because initially, there is a lot of aggression coming from Victor Strong because he demands the priest help him while he's hiding him as well. Yet, during their time, they sit together in the pews of the church and they start to realise that, actually, we're not that different from each other. And it's almost like they become in sync with each other's problem. I think the acting between Cole Meaney and Stephen Moyer is very good. I like that the film allows them to reel off large portions of dialogue without reverting back to a bit of gunplay as well. You know, there's a really good relationship here between these two actors. And I actually have, you know, I love to see a film like this where it just allows them to just, you know, go at each other. And I think they play off each other very, very well. My only
kind of old school style.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, you've seen this film, you've seen it. I mean, what is your thought on certainly Cole Meaney and Stephen Moyer's parts in it?
Yeah, no, great chemistry between the two of them. And I think there's certain bits in it where you sort of see a different side to the priest and the vicar and then different side, you know, you can't take them both as face value.
Yes.
Throughout the film, you'd learn more about each character. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very edgier seat kind of close watch.
It is. You're right. It is. It's one of those of you've got to pay attention because it's all about the dialogue. It's not about the fact that Victor Strong has walked into a church with a gun or anything else like that. It's really not. It's about the dialogue. I will say that my small issue with the movie is the fact that it wants to be a shouty, aggressive action movie at times when it's clearly not. It's really not, you know. That's the thing that kind of annoyed me about it. There are times where Victor Strong is waving the gun around and I'm like, you don't need to do this. You know, this is not required at all. It feels like all of a sudden they're going to go, let's just put a bit of Die Hard in there or something. And I think it loses
bit of Point Break.
Yeah, exactly. It loses a bit of that dramatic edge that we were getting between the two central characters. Also, there's a subplot about a third person in the building that I didn't think particularly worked that well. I mean, what did you think to that bit?
In the end, I started to laugh at the times because you would change to the third person and in a different scene, and you'd come back to Cole Meany and Stephen Moyer, and they'd moved to a different bit in the church.
Yes,
and you're like, hang on, they were just talking. They were just. Now they're over there. Oh, now they're over there. And
yeah.
It, I felt that almost became a bit of a comic.
I think it disconnected. You know, when you're watching it, you're kind of like, you're so focused on those two characters and then it goes off somewhere else and you come back and you go, what? What? Hang on, what did we miss? You didn't miss anything. That's the thing, because it is shot in real time. It is a film in real time. But I think it just throws it off. I wasn't that interested, I've got to be honest. I love the fact that it's filmed in one location, which, by the way, is in Suffolk. So just over the border in little...
Amazing.
It is. They shot it during lockdown in 2020. And it's just in this one church.
They just chuck them in a church and go, right, see you later.
Well, this was the thing, you know, a small crew just in this church. So that was it. I like that. I guess in some degree, it almost feels like it's a chamber piece, like a dramatic chamber piece that, you know, you would have seen maybe 30 or 40 years ago and not nowadays. So I hesitate to use the term action thriller, even though that's what IMDb have got. I don't think it is. I think it's a drama. You know, the action I thought was a little bit hammy, was a little bit cliched. We'd been here before. I just thought, just let the film play out between the two central characters. Let them spar each other with the dialogue rather than the stupid gunplay. And let them discover things about each other, which does happen in the film. As you said, you know, you do start to discover so much more as the film progresses. And that's where the turning points of the movie are. I think that's, you know, if they'd have taken out that subplot of the other people in the church, and if they'd taken out a bit of the gun waving, you would have a really good film here, like a really, really, really good small indie movie. At the same, you know, unfortunately, it is in there. At the same time, I still think it's a very good movie. I really like it. I mean, what was your overall opinion of it?
Yeah, I felt the way they kind of revealed little bits throughout really kept a good kind of pace to it.
Yeah.
You didn't feel bored at any point. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a very clever story told in a pretty good way.
Yeah. It's the same here. I mean, we're both clearly on the same page, which is good. You know, as I said, small niggles aside, it's still a very good film. I like this. You know, I like the fact that it's a small small movie, and it knows that, and that's what it uses to create something interesting. So yes, well,
I felt very sorry for Stephen Moyer having to walk around so sweaty for so long. Get the man a shower. Poor guy.
Yeah, he did look very sweaty. But then having said that, he had been shot. So, you know.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, but yes, he did look very sweaty all the way through it, didn't he? It's very true. Yes.
Amazing. So Confession out, is it cinema?
It's digital download. Streaming? So it is on digital download. So all of your places, you know, Prime and Sky Q and iTunes and all of these places, you can now rent it from there.
Amazing. Take us to church. Brilliant. So there's a very special twist for our FM listeners, and you can find us online, Mr. Mark Siebert. You've talked in detail about this movie with one of its stars.
I did. I was fortunate enough to have a lovely chat over Zoom with the actor Stephen Moyer, who is obviously one of the main stars, about the film, but also about him growing up in Brentwood. That's right. He's originally from Brentwood. He now lives in LA, and we discussed all of that and more in a amazing, very wide-ranging interview. And I'm really thankful that you're going to play some of it out now.
I loved it. You had a great chat with him about loads of local stuff, and about his acting chops and all sorts. And probably, I imagine, there was no video with the interview that I saw, but I heavily suspect he was sweating as much by the end.
I'd put that much pressure on him in the interview. He was sweating by the end. Yes, absolutely.
So shoot me and take me into church again. Rather that than talk to that man.
No, it was a really good interview. He'd got loads of good stuff to say about the film, and loads of stuff to say about Brentwood. So, you're going to play it shortly. Do have a listen.
Yes, marvellous. So in a little while, you hear it on for our FM listeners. For our podcast listeners, you'll have to go to phoenixfm.com and listen to it there. But we have another film to discuss on the podcast after this.
With Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Film reviews and movie news.
It's still film reviews and movie news. Mark Searby is with me. We are leaving the church and the cloth and all that behind us, I think.
We are, yes. Yes, we are.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Yes.
Where are we headed?
So we're going to talk about a new anime film, which is in cinemas. You and I have reviewed anime in the past, a few bits here and there, certainly.
Yes.
But there is a new film called Belle. It is about a teenager called Suzu who lives with her father in a small town in the mountains. She enters a virtual world called U, the letter U, and becomes Belle, a musical icon who falls for a mysterious fighter called Beast.
Oh, true story.
Now, do you see where I'm going with this? Do you see where the story is going? The film is called Belle, and she's in love with Beast.
Oh, right.
Yes?
Okay,
right. Okay.
I'm with you.
Right, so... I saw this last year and I had already heard that this was an amazing piece of work. And I saw this in the cinema and it is an astonishing piece of work. So it mixes the real world. As I said, it's all animation, but it mixes the real world with the online world in a way that I had not seen before. It felt very unique. It was almost like a fresh take on teenagers being on social media. Now, that is primarily down to the fact that when the teenagers enter the U world, it sort of becomes like a fantasy fairy tale realm, which, if you're paying attention, and we have just said this, fits the narrative because obviously this is a retelling of the classic Beauty and the Beast story. Only this time, there are two sides to it all. So it's not just the one. So you have the real world. The real world side of things shows Suzu, who's not the most popular girl at school, yet she does have some friends. She's got this like low level crush on one of the boys as well, and there are a lot of humorous moments when like she embarrasses herself in front of him, and then vice versa when he tries to talk to her as well. You know, I actually laughed a lot at this movie, more than I thought I was going to. So there's some great laugh out loud moments about teenagers and the silly things that they do. You know, when they think they've fallen in love or lost or whatever else. I mean, I thought that the whole storyline in the real world just kept on dialing it up until the finale that I just thought was utterly breathtaking and incredibly emotional. Then you have the U world storyline about Belle. I think the first thing to say here is the musical numbers are, well, to say they're excellent would be an understatement. I don't know who did the singing for the songs. However, I will say their voice is stunning, absolutely stunning. And the songs are kind of like upbeat club dance tunes, yet
amazing,
like with a classical vocal over the top. It's really interesting. They've got a couple of emotional ballads as well. Found myself tearing up a little bit, of course.
Grace Davidson was the vocalist.
Okay, right. Well, incredible voice. Yeah. Incredible voice. The soundtrack alone, I thought was amazing. Then you have this Beauty and the Beast storyline that sees Belle try and uncover who the Beast is in the real world. As I said, in the U world, he is a fighter called Beast, but she wants to find out who he really is. So, you know... It's interesting because there is this story going on, not just of that in the U world, but also of this aggressive military in the virtual world who are trying to take down the Beast because he comes out of nowhere. You know, he's a thorn in their side, sort of. So there is this fascinating way to take a timeless story of Beauty and the Beast and then plonk social media into it and plonk virtual worlds into it. As I said, it was like watching Beauty and the Beast for the first time ever. Like I'd never seen the Disney version. I'd never seen the French version that was so well received back in the silent era as well. Like I'd never read the books or anything. This felt like it was completely fresh and it mesmerized me on every single level. And then on top of that, that's just the story and the soundtrack. Okay. The animation. The animation is, I mean, it's indescribable until you've seen the trailer or watched the film. I mean, you've seen the trailer.
Yes.
What do you think?
Animazing, I would say.
But you're right. That's the thing, you're right. Like, you know, I grew up during an era where anime, certainly adult anime, was slowly coming through into the UK. So Akira, Legend of the Overfiend, I'm trying to think of some others, Blood as well. You know, all of these films that were slowly coming through. So I've seen a lot of this progression. And I'm still wowed by the incredible animation in this movie. I love this film. I absolutely adore it. It's a story that talks about teenage coming of age via online portals and how that actually can be a good thing. Yet it doesn't forget that there is a real world situation going on as well, because there's real world people out there and how that affects them. You know, it's intelligent and it's thought provoking. It's one of the best anime films I have seen in the past 10 years. Easy.
Amazing.
It really is. It's just stunning. And seeing it on the big screen, it reminded me of the power of cinema. You know, we unfortunately, you know, last year and the year before, cinemas were closed, and a lot of people kind of forgot about something like that. But when you see something like this on the big screen, you realize how powerful cinema can be and how influential it can be as well. So I adore this movie, absolutely adore it, cannot wait to see it again. I saw it in the original foreign language. I haven't seen the dub version, but there is a dub version out there as well. So so you know you can choose which one you want to go to.
So the one you would see but had subtitles?
It did, yes it did, yeah.
Amazing. So, Belle, the Dragon and the Freckled Princess is what I've got here. Is it like a one of those double title traps to fill it?
Yes. I mean, they did drop a bit. That's the thing. You know, here it's called Belle. But obviously, you know, if you search for it on IMDb, you type in Belle, it will come up. But as you said, it has got a longer title in its native territory. I think that's why. There is a longer title on IMDb and other places, obviously.
So we thought it was Belle. Beautiful.
We thought it was the Belle of the Ball. No, that's terrible. No, never mind. Oh, no,
that's
never
it.
Mind.
You're having it there. Yeah. That's where you're leaving it. Marvellous stuff. Mark, what you got for us next week?
So next week we will be talking about a new comedy called I Want You Back. We will also be talking about a British/Mexican movie called Book of Love, starring Sam Claflin, who I believe is in Peaky Blinders at the moment. And then also on DVD and Blu-ray, we're going to be talking about a Marvel movie, which hasn't done that well. It's called Eternals.
Yes.
So we've got things to say about that, which the first Marvel movie, which some people thought maybe stuttered a little bit. It dropped the Marvel Cinematic Universe ball a little bit. But we will talk about that next week.
We shall see. We shall see. And Marvel hatch it together. Excellent. Mark, thank you very much. A quick reminder for our podcast listeners, you can have a listen to Mark Zibby interviewing Stephen Moyer on all things local and confession online at phoenixfm.com.
And please do listen, because he's a funny guy. Very funny.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Yes, amazing. Some phrases as well come from that house.
Yes, he does discuss the Essex phrases, which are now in the LA household with his wife. yes, he does discuss that.
Find out what Fanta Pants means.
Yes.
If that's not a reason to listen, I don't know what is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, if you're not interested about the film, just listen so you can find out what Fanta Pants means. It's totally worth it. It really is.
Pure gold. Mark, see you next week.
Will do.
Film reviews and movie news with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Thanks for listening to Film Reviews and Movie News. We've been doing this podcast for years now. We've watched hundreds of films, and some of them were actually quite good. For even more reviews, or to get next week's Film Reviews and Movie News delivered directly to your device, pop along to stuartpink.com/reviews.
With Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Film reviews and movie news.